fans, what a Saturday. What an emotional Saturday. What a Saturday of football we enjoy. As the Central Region experiences one elation moment and one heartbreaking moment, as the 2016 VHSL high school football season comes to a close, we do have two state champions in the Richmond area. Don't want to forget about the Collegiate Cougars, my friends. As we welcome you into this edition of Central Region Now, the exclusive podcast of the RBA Sports Network, Rob Witham along with you, just still kind of coming down from all the emotions and all of the incredible action that we enjoyed both in Hampton and in Williamsburg on Saturday, as the Highland Spring Springers repeat as 5A state champions, making it 5 years in a row that we have seen a VHSL team in the Richmond area claim a state title, three in a row from L.C. Byrd in the old group AAA format in 2012 in Division 5, and then with the reclassification, they won the Class 5A championships in 2013 and 14, and now Highland Springs back-to-back in Class 5A in 2015 and 2016. Of course, re-changes of the reclassification coming up next year. There won't be an A in the title anymore. It'll be called Class 5, and we'll see what happens with all of that. And of course, a lot of teams going to lose a lot of great players. Highland Springs' senior class, very special. Dinwiddie's senior class, very special. And what an effort by the Generals of Dinwiddie. It simply was a matter of running into a better team and running out of time. Salem yesterday, Dinwiddie scored quickly. We had not even gotten into the stadium yet. They were up 6-0. As we literally walked into the stadium, Salem tied the game. I was like 20 feet away from the touchdown as I tried to find my way to the elevator to find my way to the press box at Zabel Stadium. And what a beautiful job they've done there redoing it. I walked into the press room, and it looks just like the one at the Robbins Center at the University of Richmond. Carbon copy. But it's absolutely beautiful. And then proceeded to watch a phenomenal game where Salem comes out on top 31-27. And frankly, one of the reasons why was Dinwiddie ran out of time. They had the ball. They were able to get it all the way down inside the 20 into the red zone with just a few seconds to play. They had one play from 3 seconds to go that had they scored on it, they would have won the state title. And they fell just short. And a hard way to end the season when you're 14-0 and you lose your only game on the last Saturday of the season. But no reason for head coach Billy Mills or for any of the Dinwiddie Generals to hold their heads down low at all. A phenomenal campaign where they had some fantastic wins. They finally got revenge on Hanover for how their 2015 season ended and started, quite frankly. They got past Monacan in a way that really opened up a lot of people's eyes in the second round of the playoffs, where some people thought, ooh, this is where they might get tripped up. Down by a point, late fourth quarter, season on the line against Lake Taylor. They find themselves the beneficiaries of some great individual play and some great connections. Witt to Freeland, and then the great interception by Pope. And they vanquish Lake Taylor. But I think the Generals would agree with me when I say that the best team they faced all year was the team they faced at Zabel Stadium on Saturday. And for my money, the best individual performance by a quarterback that I've seen this entire season at the high school level was Noah Beckley of Salem High School on Saturday. He finished 20 of 24 for 254 yards, two touchdowns. Now, his rushing stats look a bit pedestrian. 13 carries, 51 yards, averaged almost 4 yards a carry. But on a couple of running plays, a couple of passing plays, and most importantly, I think they were all on third down, Beckley made 2 and 3 Generals miss trying to either sack him or tackle him while he was trying to make the yard to gain, and he made that yard to gain. Salem was 11 of 15 in third down conversions, and they were 3 of 3 in fourth down conversions. And 95% of the reason was Noah Beckley. A fantastic performance by their senior quarterback. You know, and Dinwiddie's conversion rate was very good yesterday, too. 7 of 11 third down, 2 of 2 fourth down. Here's one of the biggest differences in the game. Red zone opportunities. Spartans are in the red zone 6 times, they score 4. Dinwiddie in the red zone just 3 times, they score 2. So the averages are the exact same. But the opportunities, that's what made the difference. And, of course, Dinwiddie had to play from behind from 8:30 left in the first quarter on. They were able to get to 24-19 after being down 24-12. They had a good drive there in the third quarter. Late in the third, they scored on the pass from Witt to Jones to cut it to 5. And then early fourth quarter, they finally got their first lead in about 24 minutes of action when it was 4th and 1 at their own 44-yard line. And Coach Billy Mills rolls the dice and says, you know, if we punt it away here, I think what he feared was another just long drive that, you know, Beckley controls the clock. They've been doing so well in third down conversions, and maybe they score, and Dinwiddie gets the ball back, and they're down 2 possessions, and time's running out. So in the end, he made the right call, and I would still agree with him to make this call even if they hadn't made the first down. But not only did they make the first down, they rushed to the line, they handed off to Zion Sturtevant, and he breaks a tackle and breaks up the middle, and he goes to the house for 56 yards. Gutsiest coaching move I've seen all year, and it paid off big time. And at that moment, with 9:24 to go in the game, you had a feeling that could be the dagger. That could be what we look back at and go, Dinwiddie clinched the state title by that move. But Salem would not be denied, going on a phenomenal 16-play drive that lasted 8 minutes and 33 seconds, scoring to take the lead 31-27 with 50 seconds left. And that meant Dinwiddie had to travel. I forget exactly where they started that final drive, but it was most of the length of the field in less than 50 seconds with only one timeout, and they got all the way to the 11. All the way to the 11. We have the final completion from Witt to Pope. We have it on video. It's on Twitter at the RVA Sportsnet. You need to see it. It's a thing of beauty how Kevon caught that football for about a 35, 40-yard gain is beyond me. And some great stats for Dinwiddie as usual. Zion Sturtevant, 13 carries, 126 yards and a touchdown. Witt had 21 yards rushing. He was 17 of 25 for 215 and 2 touchdowns through the air. Kevon Pope caught one of them. He had 8 catches for 139 yards. Derek Jones had the other touchdown pass as well. And Kevon Pope on the other side, just, you know, 9.5 tackles, no big deal. And, of course, he'll be back. The recruiting war for him will heat up big time over this offseason, and he will be one of the top players easily in the Richmond area in the class of 2018, if not the top one right now, that will be talked about as we get set for the 2017 season next week. Now let me flip the page and go back to Hampton earlier in the day. We have written extensively, not only about yesterday's game, but about the Highland Springs season as a whole, in our article at HenricoCountySports.net. And if you haven't seen it yet, I hope you'll take some time today or whenever you're listening to the podcast. Just go to HenricoCountySports.net. That's one of the hyperlocal websites you'll find only with the RVA Sports Network, where we sit down and we break down the entire season. We talked about how different this season was from last year, how Coach Johnson wanted them, the 2016 Springers, to not rest on any laurels from 2015, to put the rings away and go, okay, guys, new year, new season, new purpose, new goals. It has nothing to do with last year. We start all over again. And he worked on them, and he worked on them, and he worked on them. And as he said in the post-game press conference yesterday, you know, maybe there were a few things I said to him while they were pounding the weight room that, you know, maybe weren't very appropriate. But I kept pounding on them, and he got them ready. And then they started the season with the win over Hermitage, something they didn't do in 2015. They get the win over Norview, but then they have trouble. Carter is hurt and misses most of the Meadowbrook game. They stumble offensively. Meadowbrook gets that 8-7 win. And it was kind of a cold slap in the face, kind of a wake-up call. And so the Springers take their bye week. They get kind of reassembled and get ready. We first saw them on a Monday night makeup game at Atlee, where they looked good, but not championship good. But then about a week and a half later, we saw them at home against Lee Davis, where they had some definite issues in terms of penalties and discipline. And Coach Johnson on our postgame show that night on the game of the week was very unhappy, and rightfully so. He saw a lot of things that he knew had to be cleaned up if his team was going to go on the run he wanted them to go on. And they did clean them up. And they pounded Henrico, and they pounded Patrick Henry, and they took care of Verina, and they went into the playoffs as the number one seed, handled deep run as expected. Early on, score for score with Douglas Freeman, then they pull away. And then came the tests. But before all of that happened, life came in the way. Tragedy came in the way. And after the deep run victory in round one, came word that wide receiver Chris Thaxton's mom, Angie Johnson, the team mom, so the mom in de facto fashion to all of the players, and in a lot of those players' lives, probably was their de facto mom, passes away of cancer. And now suddenly you're asking a group of 14 to 18-year-old boys to have to handle grief and questions and pain while you're trying to focus on repeating as a state champion. Some teams, that would be the worst possible timing, and they would not be able to overcome that. Some teams can take that and channel it and utilize it. And I made a statement, and I think this was on my personal Facebook page when I was introducing the story, and I rarely put links to the stories that I write on my personal Facebook page, but I felt this one needed to be heard. I used the term Highland Springs utilized the emotions that they felt. They did not use them. There's a huge difference between the term utilize and use. To use something connotates that you take advantage of it, or somehow you're using it in a selfish or nefarious way. To utilize something means you are taking it and you are trying to get the most out of it for a positive purpose. For a purpose that will mean well so that it will help rather than hinder. You would, you know, in a situation where you were handling a major crisis in your life, you would use alcohol. But you would utilize the help and the resources of your friends, your family, your house of worship, your faith, that sort of thing. So that's why I wanted to make sure that people understood that this team utilized what they had to go through, what they had to cope with, what they had to deal with. And the goal became, we've got to win a state title for Angie. We've got to win a state title for Chris's mom. And so they do arguably their best defensive work of the year in that second half of the game against L.C. Byrd, where Byrd only scored a trash touchdown with less than a minute to go when the game already was no longer in doubt. Stopping Shedrick McCall, 125 yards in the first half, 25, if that, in the second. Then having to overcome all of the runs that the Norview Pilots gave to them in the regional final and the state semifinal, a much improved Norview team from week two, and getting the win by three, surviving, as opposed to the year before where they pretty much cruised over Indian River at that level. And then you knew going into Saturday's game with Stonebridge that it was going to be a matter of Highland Springs facing a team who had been watching game film for 52 weeks. Now, I know, You're gonna look at me, and some of you even in the game are listening to me right now going, Rob, we go one game at a time, and we only focus on the next ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And I hear you tell me that all the time, and I believe you 90% of the time. But you cannot tell me that the Stonebridge coaching staff has not been looking at that film in the off season, hoping against hope that they would get another shot at Highland Springs. To do it, they put the film aside at the start of the season, and they had to focus on their opponents. They had to overcome two regular season losses. They were the 3 seed in 5A North. They had to beat who would have been the number 1 seed, Brook Point, had they not lost to Massaponics on the last night of the regular season. They had to do that on the road. Then they had to go to Massaponics in the state semifinal, and they beat them on the road in comeback fashion to get what they wanted. And you know, Stonebridge, you could tell from the minute they started that game, from the opening kick, the strategy they had that forced the fumble that gave them the ball to help them take a quick 7-0 lead. You could tell they'd been watching the 2015 state championship video for the last 52 weeks, hoping they'd get this moment, and now they had it. And the Bulldogs played a fantastic game. They were very worthy opponents, but they made two critical errors. The first error that Stonebridge made, and I will never in my life understand why they did it. Up 13-0 into the first quarter. Fourth down and short at their own 32-33-yard line. You know, you've got a Springers team who in the first quarter, they looked bewildered. They looked a bit dazed. They certainly, from that opening kickoff fumble, did not get off to a good start, and the hangover lasted for most of the quarter. 13-0, they have the ball. Fourth and short, but I'm at my own 32-33-yard line. Okay, I punt the football. I put the Springers back to their own 30, 35, and I make them try to snap out of their funk. The last thing I'm going to do is help them snap out of their funk, and that's exactly what Stonebridge did. They had such confidence at that point that their defense could stop Highland Springs because of what they had seen early on in the game that they went for it on fourth down at their own 32-33-yard line, and they failed. Highland Springs stopped them. Now, admittedly, in that first quarter, Highland Springs stopped very little of the running game of Stonebridge. So they look at it and they think, man, we get a first down here, and it's just another blow to their heart, and we keep on going, we pour it on, and we don't let up. All right, if that's what you're thinking, then that's what you're thinking. I would have played the game of field position, and I would have made a stumbling offense find a way to spark themselves. I would not give my opponent any type of emotional spark, and that's exactly, the Bulldogs handed them a spark on a silver platter. And as soon as that happened, what happens next? Juwan Carter starts the second quarter with runs of 14 and 19 yards, the second one for a touchdown. And with less than a minute off the clock since Stonebridge made that decision, and I think some people, I know there were people in Springer Nation in the stands that saw that play call as a slap in the face. And I suspect that once the Highland Springs defense got the stop and came off the field, they saw it as a slap in the face. Maybe. I'm just looking at what I saw. I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, please correct me. Had I been a member of the Highland Springs defense, I would have felt it was a slap in the face. What do you mean you're going for it in your own territory against me? You don't think I can stop you? Well, I did. And that was the spark. And it was a totally different Springer offense that came on the field in the second quarter. So Carter, two runs, touchdown. It's 13-7. Now we're going to stay at 13-7 for about a quarter and a half. The game settled down then. It was a grind. Stonebridge would get their yards, couldn't score. Highland Springs had some good plays but couldn't score. We're 13-7 at the half. We're 13-7 deep into the third quarter when finally the Springers take their first lead on the touchdown pass from Carter to Winstead. There on the front quarter of the end zone at the pylon, beautiful play. Carter, you know, he called Winstead in the postgame press conference. He said, that's my man, and if he's got one-on-one coverage, I'm going to go get him. And he did it then, and he did it at one other critical time we'll talk about in a minute. But that drive there was a thing of beauty. 13 plays, 80 yards, took almost 6 minutes off the clock. It looked like a Stonebridge drive. Because, you know, Stonebridge, they pound at you and pound at you and pound at you and take time off the clock. Highland Springs was quick strike. They could score in 1, 2, 3 plays. And they did that, too. And that jump-started the rest of the game. First minute, fourth quarter, Josh Brees, who had a phenomenal game running for Stonebridge. 22-yard touchdown run. Two-point conversion, good. 11 plays, 75 yards, but it only took about 4 minutes off the clock. So we're early fourth quarter, 21-14 Stonebridge. Highland Springs gets the kickoff, returns it to the 38-yard line. Handoff, Willie Harkless, breaks a tackle, finds a seam. And Willie Harkless put it in third gear, and Stonebridge could not outrun him. Period. End of sentence. Harkless for six, 21-21. They get the ball back after forcing the only punt of the football game. Stonebridge punted one time with 9:33 to go. They get it back. Three plays later, Carter to James Jackson. Jackson with some good yards after the catch. Touchdown Highland Springs. It's 28-21. Setting up one of the best drives I've seen ever in high school football, especially because of when it was, the fourth quarter of the state championship game. And you got to give your hat, tip it off to Stonebridge for a 16-play, 80-yard drive that took 7 minutes and 13 seconds off the clock. Block scored his third 1-yard touchdown run of the afternoon. And it's 28-27. They call timeout, and Stonebridge goes, we're going for it here. We're not settling for overtime. We're either going to score the two-point conversion or we're going to fail. And so they give it to Gertie, Leland Gertie, looking down left side, trying to get to the front pylon, and he makes it. 29-28. In Stonebridge, the Bulldog fans were below us. Our press box was on the visiting sidelines at Hampton University. And they were going nuts, and deservedly so. What an emotional game it had been. It had been a roller coaster. They dominated early, and then it became a slugfest, and then it became a point fest. And with a minute and 22 to go, they had more points than the other team did, and they so desperately wanted to knock off Highland Springs. You also have to remember that coming into yesterday, Stonebridge, which has only been around, less than 20 years, this was their seventh appearance in a state championship game. And coming in, they were 1-5 overall. So Stonebridge had been to the finals six times and have only lifted the trophy once, and that was 9 years ago. So nobody at the school now was around. They were in elementary school the last time that happened. And they remember what happened last year, and they wanted it badly. But this is where Stonebridge made their second big mistake. They left too much time on the clock. As wonderfully as that drive went, and taking 7:13 off the clock, it still gave them a minute 22, them being Highland Springs. Now, this particular mistake had a part A and a part B. Had I been the Stonebridge kicker, I would have booted it as far as I possibly could. But they did not. And Billy Kemp got his hands on the football. And Kemp, once he does, is incredibly dangerous. Found his way down the left side, in front of the Stonebridge bench, into Stonebridge territory, and he gets all the way down to the 34-yard line. So you look, and there's a minute 14 left on the clock, and they need 34 yards to win the championship. That's all day for this Highland Springs offense. And you know that they know it. So you know that Jawan Carter, at that particular point, was looking and going, okay, guys, we've got them right where we want them. Whereas just 5 minutes ago in real time, in lifetime, Stonebridge was saying the same thing about Highland Springs. So, false start penalty backed him up to the 39. Carter runs for six to the 33. Carter finds Thaxton over the middle for 12, first down at the 21. Then Carter realizes that Winstead has good coverage on him, realizes he's got a shot, lifts one up to him, and lets the big man go up and get it, and he does at the 3-yard line. It's first and goal. They call the play. They run the play. Thaxton is not the option, but as Jawan Carter said in the post-game press conference, I looked and I saw a streak of purple come across the middle of the field, and that was Chris Thaxton. And so he took a fastball and zoomed it into the end zone, right into Thaxton's hands. Chris caught it. Chris went to his knees. Chris went and looked at the sky. And there was such a myriad of emotions on the Highland Springs sidelines A combination of 50% cheers and 50% tears, as they had just witnessed what could only be described as a Hollywood storybook ending. Now, I know there were still 26 seconds left. I did turn to some people who were associated with Highland Springs in the press box, and I said, you could not have scripted this any better. And one of them looked at me and said, yeah, but there's still time left on the clock. And I'm like, you're right, you're right. But my feeling at that point was this. Stonebridge now has to pass the football. And that's not what Stonebridge does. When you are now down by 6, 35-29, and you have 20 seconds, and you've got to go 60 yards, you have to pass the football. You can try to run it once, but you better hope you break it to the house or you break it so far down the field that you have an opportunity to get down, spike the football, and then your options are open as to how you want to play the final play, kind of like what happened to Dinwiddie last night. But the Bulldogs realized they had to throw the football. Yesterday, Stonebridge combined was 1 of 9 for 2 yards and 2 interceptions passing. So Highland Springs had Stonebridge right where they wanted them. They had to pass the football. They passed it twice. The first one was incomplete. The second one was woefully underthrown and right into the waiting arms of Billy Kemp at midfield. And that did it. The Highland Springs Springers, 35, and the Stonebridge Bulldogs, 29. Two major decisions that I believe cost Stonebridge the football game. They played a phenomenal game, but they did a couple of things that let the door stay open. And when Highland Springs had their opportunities in quick strike fashion, they did what they did best. They score quickly, they score often. 21 points in the fourth quarter. Now, granted, Stonebridge scored 16 in the fourth. But the bottom line is, Highland Springs got the one that mattered most. I know this one hurt Stonebridge, and I salute them on a phenomenal season. And what they had to overcome over in the North region to get to the championship. But it pales in comparison to what the Highland Springs Springers had to deal with to get where they got on Saturday afternoon. And now I just ask you, you know, we don't talk politics or religion here on the RBA Sports Network, but I will say this. If you are religiously inclined, I want you to keep the Highland Springs players and coaches in your prayers. Because I know from personal experience what has taken place in their lives in the last month. And it's this, and I'm not trying to be a psychoanalyst or anything. I have counseling experience. I am an ordained minister. I know many of you don't know that, but you know it now. What happens in a situation like that is that you're able to take something like a time together, that month in a football playoff run with your teammates and your coaching staff and your guys, and you can channel many different types of emotions into it. And now that is over. And there aren't any practices left. There's no need to. You've won the title. You've got the trophy. So the deed is done. But now it's going to be that extra time. And the holidays in a couple of weeks. And so there's going to be more opportunity for downtime for these young men to kind of begin to process emotions that they've been putting aside. Focusing on football rather than that. And now they're going to be focusing on that. So my thoughts and my prayers are with Chris Thaxton, his family, the Highland Springs team, the Highland Springs coaches, and the Highland Springs community. And I know one thing, having been around the Highland Springs community, especially these past two seasons, covering them as in-depth as we have, I know that they will be there for each other. And those of you listening from Highland Springs, watch out for each other. Be with each other. Take care of each other. Check in with each other. Love each other. It will make that trophy that will come up in your case that says 2016 5A state champions, it'll make it mean so much more than winning a football game than if it even galvanizes this community more than the first trophy did a year ago. What an emotional way to end up our 2016 football season. So congratulations, Highland Springs. Congratulations to the Collegiate Cougars winning that BISAA Division I state title back in November. Hats off to Dinwiddie. What an unbelievable season. It took the best quarterback performance we witnessed all season to beat you in the state championship game. We knew it would take a special team to beat Dinwiddie because they were a special team. And frankly, Dinwiddie just ran out of time. And they did the best they could. And what a year at 14-1. What a year. Great year of high school football in the RVA again. And we celebrate it Saturday at the Big River Rivalry. Can't wait for this event. Fourth year that it's happened at Randolph-Macon College. It starts at 1 o'clock. Best players from the north versus the best from the south from the class of 2017. It's a way to celebrate the season, celebrate the senior class, and all proceeds go to the Children's Hospital of Richmond. That's my favorite part of the Big River Rivalry. Your ticket dollars go to the Children's Hospital of Richmond. The Touchdown Club of Richmond does a wonderful job putting on this event and making sure that maximum dollars are given to such a worthy cause. Now, I know that there is a new game this year, and I know that this game apparently has evolved from an all-star game down in the Tidewater area in the past few years, and this year they changed their format and they want to make it a battle between the 757 and the 804, and I know that a lot of the good players from the 804 have opted to go and play in that game next Saturday. We wish the 804 team luck. We hope they win that game. But the RVA Sports Network is proudly behind the Big River Rivalry, and that's where we will be Saturday afternoon. Randolph-Macon College, 1 o'clock tip to kickoff, and we'll have complete Twitter coverage across our Twitter network, the hyper-local coverage that you can only find from the RVA Sports Network. We'll talk about your Henrico County boys on Henrico Sports, the Hanover players on Hanover Sports, the Chesterfield players on Chesterfield Sports, and everybody else on our main feed, the RVA Sportsnet, as we celebrate the season and we hopefully raise a whole lot of money for the Children's Hospital of Richmond. Now, if you for some reason can't make it out to the game, then my buddies Gary Hess and Gary Criswell over at Fox Sports 910 will have coverage of it on the air Saturday afternoon. 12:30, I think they hit the air, and of course, 1 o'clock again is kickoff. But I hope, don't let the weather fool you. Come on out and be with us. Bundle up. It's December football. You expect it to be cold. But these kids really deserve it. Come join us at the Big River Rivalry Saturday, 1 o'clock at Randolph-Macon. Part of a major Saturday for us, as we'll be there. And as soon as the game ends, we hit the car, we hit the interstate, and we head to the Collegiate School Aquatic Center, Swim RVA. And we will have live coverage of the championship round of the 2016 Hanover Hawk Holiday Invitational Swimming Championship right here on the RVA Sports Network. We had it last year for the first time in their inaugural run. We had great success and a lot of people saying, hey, we were out of town for the holidays because, you know, school will be out at that point. And we couldn't come to the meet, but we listened to the meet. And we thank you so much for doing it. And we're like, okay, well, we're going to do it again this year. So Saturday is going to be a crazy busy day for us like it was yesterday as we record this on Sunday afternoon. But Lord have mercy, how can we miss? Big River Rivalry at 1, and then we'll head over to broadcast live the Hawk Invitational Championships. That starts at 5 o'clock at Swim RVA. We will go on the air at 5 p.m. on the RVA Sports Network on our YouTube channel. It is a huge week on our YouTube channel. Monday night, girls basketball. Elise Armantrout in the block party that is at Lee, coming to J.R. Tucker to take on the now number 8 ranked Tigers. A little spoiler alert, our new top 10s in a moment. That's Monday night at 7:30 on our YouTube channel. At Lee girls basketball at J.R. Tucker. That's going to be a great one. Can't wait for that. And then Tuesday night, it's Doubleheader Tuesday. We're going to be live at Mills Godwin when the Hermitage Panthers come in. Girls action at 6, boys at 7:30-ish, doubleheader Tuesday night basketball on the game of the week, only on the RVA Sports Network. On our YouTube channel, we begin at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. Then we have swimming live Saturday at 5. Our holiday Feast of Hoops is coming up the week between Christmas and New Year's, and there may be more. I can't say anything right now. But I can say this much. You really need to be following our Twitter feeds early this week, because there could be a major broadcast announcement coming. That's all I can say right now. All right, let's get to our top 10s in basketball. And then I want to close with a quote from Lauren Johnson from yesterday's post-game press conference about somebody who I thought in the championship game Saturday in Hampton typified what being a high school student athlete is all about. He was a player whose name we have called some this year in previous Highland Springs games, but we didn't see him play like he played yesterday until yesterday, and how critical his play was. And he's not one of the big five or six players that you hear all of the media talk about when you talk about Highland Springs. You don't hear his name very often. So I love it when we get a chance to talk about an unsung hero. And we're going to finish the podcast with that coming up in just a sec. Right now, though, quickly, the new top 10 girls and boys basketball polls. Third top 10 polls of the season. We begin with the girls, and we start at number 10. Returning to the poll, they were preseason number 5. They fell out after a loss to a team now in the top 10. But they have bounced back very nicely. Gotten a few wins, including a win over Nansman River on Saturday. And they are the Skyhawks of L.C. Byrd. Jayla Henderson, Brenna Bentley, and company, they're back in the top 10 at number 10. Also debuting in the top 10 at number 9, the unbeaten James River Rapids. Congratulations to James River. They make their debut in our top 10. They are 6-0 on the young season. They have made an early season statement, and we reward them with a spot in the top 10. Rising 1 to number 8, J.R. Tucker, the team that will welcome Atlee in on Monday night, and we'll have that game for you here on the RVA Sports Network on the YouTube channel. Falling to number 7 this week, down 1, Trinity Episcopal, but they got 2 very good wins this weekend at the Travisdale Tournament. And that puts them at 3-2 and poised very well to move on rest of December and into January. Up 1 to number 6, the Blue Devils of Hopewell. Keep an eye on them, especially Conference 26 and at the 3A level. The top 5 remain the same this week. St. Catharines is at number 5. Cosby they stay at number 4. They were once, I believe, 6 in the preseason poll, so now they've spent 2 weeks at number 4. Holding at number 3, it's Taya Robinson and Huguenot. Holding at number 2 is Highland Springs, and we got to give a congratulations to our number 1 team, the Monacan Chiefs. They go up to the big She Got Game Classic this past weekend against some of the top teams in the nation. And they get 2 very impressive wins. Megan Walker hangs 30-plus twice, once Friday night, once Saturday night. And the Chiefs get 2 big victories, but not just because of Megan. You know, Monacan is a great team. Monacan's one of the best girls' basketball teams in the country. But a lot of people think, well, I guess so. They got the number 1 recruit. It's not just because of Megan Walker. And you watch one Monacan game, even in the last 2 or 3 years, you realize that. You realize there's Jaden Morris and Alex Parson and Abby Ogic and I'm gonna forget people, Shalonda Wilkins, and the list goes on, and there are new pieces to the puzzle even this year. So Monacan stays unbeaten. Great weekend for them against some incredibly high-talented quality opponents, and they stay at number 1. So girls top 10, Monacan, Highland Springs, Huguenot, Cosby, St. Catharines, Hopewell up 1 to 6, Trinity Episcopal down 1 to 7, J.R. Tucker up 1 to 8, new to the poll, 9 James River, 10 returning L.C. Byrd, Midlothian, and Deep Run drop out of the top 10. Boys top 10, a little bit of change based on what's happened this past week. We had some interesting matchups. You had, of course, our game of the week, where L.C. Byrd hit 10 three-pointers in the first half en route to their win at Verina, and they stay at number 1. We'll go to the bottom of the top in a second, but we mentioned that because then Verina bounced back and got a huge win Friday night over Henrico. So how did it affect the top 10? Well, here we go. One new team to the poll. Benedictine drops out. We welcome the Mills Godwin Eagles to the top 10. They get their first win over Deep Run in a long time back on Friday night. They are unbeaten on the season, and they get number 9 Hermitage on Tuesday night at home. And we'll have that game live for you here on the RVA Sports Network on our YouTube channel. So it's Mills Godwin at 10, Hermitage at 9. Hopewell remains at 8, falling to 7, Henrico. Also falling to 6, even though they beat Henrico, but they did lose to LC Byrd. Number 6 now, Verina. Top 5, moving up 2 spots, John Marshall to number 5. Huge win Saturday over Keekatan, and they look like the team to beat in 3A right now in this area. Conference is 25, 26, they're in 26. And, you know, even looking ahead down the road, you have to begin to wonder what other teams in 3A are going to be able to stack up against a Greg Jones, Isaiah Todd, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, John Marshall, they were unranked, then they were 7th, now they're 5th. Moving up 1-2, I should say, to 4th, Alex Petrie and the Saints of St. Christopher's. They remain undefeated, so they now are at number 4. Just ahead of them, the top VISAA team in our top 10 continues to be Trinity Episcopal. They get 2 wins and win the Dale tournament this weekend and stay unblemished on the season. Top 2 remain the same as well. Monacan at 2 and LC Byrd remains our number 1 team. So, boys top 10, LC Byrd, Monacan, Trinity Episcopal stay top 3. St. Christopher's moves from 6 to 4. John Marshall from 7 to 5, Verina down from 4 to 6, Henrico down from 5 to 7, Hopewell stays 8th, Hermitage stays 9th, moves up 1 to 9th, I should say, because Benedictine was 9th last week. They have dropped out of the poll. Mills Godwin moves in at number 10. We'll post the new top 10 polls, of course, on our website at rvasportsnetwork.com. So you can check them out there. Nightly, look for the scoreboard at rvasportsnetwork.com. We keep you posted on all the area sports, not just high school scores. We get you posted on college scores and other events. Plus, on the high school level, we're not just basketball. We keep you posted when we get the results from swimming and wrestling and gymnastics, etc. We get them. We post them. We care more than just about basketball during winter sports. We cover them all. We were at gymnastics on Thursday night. We'll be at swimming this coming weekend. Wrestling, we've got you on the radar. Track, we've got you on the radar, too. We'll see you very soon. All schools, all sports. That's our motto here at the RVA Sports Network. Now, to close out, a couple of quick thoughts. Number one, I got this weather alert driving home from Williamsburg Saturday night from my friends at NBC 12 talking about the possibility of wintry weather on Friday night into early Saturday. And, of course, the Times-Dispatch Invitational Tournament starts Friday night in 4 different locations. And so as I tweeted out that alert from 12 later on in the evening with my own personal opinion that, you know what, we don't have time for ice on Friday night. Could you push this back? You know, like Jim Duncan and the guys really have any control over that. Ha, 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 ha. But if for some reason any of our events this week or weekend get bothered due to wintry weather, of course, we will keep you posted on Twitter, on our Facebook pages as well. We had a lot of great response to our Facebook Live yesterday from down at Hampton University for Highland Springs. We're going to utilize Facebook Live more. We've got 3 different Facebook pages. If you're a fan in Hanover Sports, follow us at facebook.com/Hanover Sports, at Henrico Sports. A lot of you joined us this week there. facebook.com/Henrico Sports. And, of course, we're also on Facebook with everything going on across the area on the RVA Sports Network. It's facebook.com/RVA Sports Network. All right, I want to close with the words of Lauren Johnson, the head coach of Highland Springs, when I asked him in the postgame press conference on Saturday about the play of unsung hero Justin Hopkins, a player who really epitomized the team that captured their 2nd straight state championship at Hampton University Saturday. Here are the comments of Coach Lauren Johnson, and then we bid you adieu. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Central Region Now, the exclusive presentation and podcast of the RVA Sports Network. And by the way, solely intended for private non-commercial use of our audience. Other usage, if you don't go through HCS Media LLC, it's strictly prohibited. Make it legal and official. Back with another podcast next Sunday evening on the 18th as we begin the winter break and we look ahead to Holiday Feast of Hoops 2016. Lauren Johnson will take us out of this edition of Central Region Now.
Coach, you had a couple of unsung heroes today. Glaster did a great job again in the kicking game like he did last year. The number that kept coming up to me at key times defensively, though, was 43, Justin Hopkins. Can you just speak to his performance today?
Yeah, so Hop is what I call, nobody else has said this, I've said he is the runt of the Hopkins boys, right? So you got a brother that's 6'2", you got a brother that's 6'1", and then you got the little Justin Hopkins, who's 5'10", max. But his heart is as big as anybody's heart in our program, and we got to find a place for him to go to school. People overlook him because he's a little short, but he is a football player, and he runs to the ball. He's pretty fast as a linebacker. He runs track at Olive Springs. He's a great student, and he works extremely hard. He's just, he is an unsung hero. You know, every year, it seems like Coach Simmons has to go out and find linebackers. They're always in the program, but they just hadn't turned the corner yet. And last year, he was one of those guys. But this year, when he was given his opportunity, he took advantage of it, and he's phenomenal throughout the entire year. 4 interceptions at the outside linebacker position, multiple tackles. I know he's well over 75 tackles. He probably won't be all regional, all state, but he's definitely all everything for Olive Springs, and we appreciate him.